From WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, this is the Chancellor's Report, featuring Mark Mone, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Here's your host, Dave Edwards.
Welcome to another edition of Chancellor's Report. I'm Dave Edwards. My guest is the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Mark Mone. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Dave.
So last month on our show, we took a little bit of an internal focus looking at UWM's research agenda. But when you discuss something like research at a university, you drift into how that research or other work at a university impacts the community. So today, I think we want to talk a little bit about how UW-Milwaukee is working to meet the needs of the city, the state, and the region. And I know this has been something that you've been talking about really ever since your inauguration, of the importance of this.
Yeah, it sure is. Thank you for asking that, Dave. It's an important issue. You know, I've been chancellor since 2014, and what I realized right out of the gates was that, you know, having been at UWM for a long time, we're a research university, but we're also an engaged access university. And if you put those two things together and you focus on student success and how we make a difference in the region, combined with our research capabilities, you have a perfect recipe for making a difference in not only the community, but the state and well beyond. So I think it's just a great opportunity for us to continue to move some of the big things forward that make a difference in this region.
I guess it's easy at the 30,000-foot level to say, well, we want to engage with the city and the community. But can you give me some specifics? What are some of the key areas that you really want the university to invest its time and resources in?
You bet. You know, I think categorically I'd start with some of the things around economic development. You look at aspects of social justice, the area of academic achievement, and then finally innovation and entrepreneurship. Those are some of the broad areas that I think UWM is making a huge difference in.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about some of these. Now, I know, for example, innovation and entrepreneurship is something that you've been stressing and have had a lot of success in building this out. But, you know, this is you're trying to help a state that is not known for its innovation and entrepreneurship.
You are so right. Unfortunately, you know, if you look at the Kauffman Index, that's one, puts us dead last in Milwaukee, 39th out of 40 metro areas in terms of business startups and entrepreneurial type of activity. So we've got a huge challenge in front of us. I know there's other indicators in terms of some of the growth once companies have made it through that first and second round of funding. We do better in some indicators. But in general, our Lubar Entrepreneurship Center is one of one of the creative areas that can make a difference. Through the Lubar Entrepreneurship Center, I'm going to break that down into two different categories. One is the success of the center itself so far without even a building finished. We did break the ground on the building in January of 2018. We look forward to early 2019 having the building open. But we've got a series of programs that I'll talk about in a moment. But just in terms of the support for that, the state through UW System provided $10 million for the building. And then we've raised another $15 million in terms of philanthropy, with the lead gift coming from the Lubar family. And we're so appreciative of the incredible generosity of the Lubar family. And many others have climbed on board. And we're well underway with that kind of funding to have an awful lot of programs that include a student startup challenge that have had over 80 different teams participate, with the NSF I-Corps, which is a program that we work with a number of other area universities. We've got fresh ideas, so thousands of freshmen are getting exposure across the entire campus to innovation and entrepreneurship, no matter what their major is. And that's really the differentiator for our entrepreneurial activities. It's not just in the business school. It's not just in the engineering school. It's really throughout our College of Health Science, School of Education, Peck School of the Arts, name the school and college, and we have students that are getting entrepreneurial ideas. So you see today we've launched almost 20 companies with almost $20 million in follow-on funding for those businesses to be launched. And, you know, every major company in this area, every one of them, whether it's the Allen Bradley that became Rockwell Automation or Harley-Davidson, Miller Brewing, they all started in garages. They all started as small companies, you know, and it was two people or one person, you know, in their basement or in their garage tinkering. And that's what we're trying to create here, is that future for this area.
Hope you're getting stock options, is what I can say. So another one of your key areas, of course, is academic achievement. Of course, you're a university. But how does that subject alone relate to the community at large?
So we're uniquely positioned as an access university to address one of the significant challenges that the state of Wisconsin faces, and that's known as the achievement gap, and that's the gap between students who are historically disadvantaged, underrepresented in college, and those who are not. And the state fares the worst, 50th out of 50. It's dead last. And in Milwaukee, we've got – really, there's a lot of urban environments in Wisconsin that face that academic problem. That's why it's a statewide issue. But as an access university, we accept 90% of the students, and a lot of those students need more advising, need more financial assistance, need more help. And we're a university that prides ourselves on working. We've made great strides on that in the last couple of years, but we have a long way to go to close that gap. We're not doing that well historically in terms of for a long time, but we've been closing that gap and we need to do more. So that's going to provide more equity in Milwaukee. That's going to be something that helps reduce that income disparity if we have individuals who are educated to more like the national norm. On that front, our state lags with the national average for population college degrees about 34 or 35%. We're hardly at 30%. We want to close that gap overall for Wisconsin residents, but in particular in southeastern Wisconsin. So academic achievement is the path for employers to find a better educated workforce, but especially for our graduates to have quality of life, to have income levels and job stability. And that, in turn, really creates a stronger, more vibrant community.
As you were describing that, I happen to think that, you know, maybe I'm getting this wrong, but, you know, there was once upon a time where an employer wanted somebody to come in and, you know, make the widgets. But it seems to me now that more jobs require critical thinking. Yeah, there are still widget makers, but more and more jobs are requiring more than the ability to come in every day and just do the same task over and over again.
Dave, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, you look at states that lead the nation, such as Massachusetts. We have a state next to us, Minnesota, that have higher educated workforces and companies. If you look at the number of Fortune 500 companies and you look at the types of occupations people get, it's in part because, you know, you have a workforce that's job ready. And that's one thing. But it's also where you have a nimble workforce, because if you're educators and your education is based in humanities, social sciences, liberal arts, and your students are critical thinkers, writers, and really can see around corners, understand that the skills today may not be the ones that are important in 3, 5, or 10 years. You have lifelong learners, and that's where states really get ahead. And so I mentioned a moment ago the fact that we want to bring the average up to meet the average in Wisconsin to meet the national average. Well, why don't we shoot for a leading average, like 40 or 41%, which is what the projections are for the smart jobs, for the kind of whether it's digital or innovation economy types of jobs. But to your point, we have to ground that, and that's why at UWM, as a complete university, we really do have that well-rounded student that graduates, no matter what their degree is in.
Boy, this links into the conversation you and I were having before we rolled tape here, and that was that increasingly people who are coming out of college now have to be nimble because the job force is continually evolving. And I would even imagine, you know, if a university like UWM turns out employers for, let's say, Foxconn, chances are the person who starts at Foxconn today or next year, 10 years from now, will be doing a different job there anyway.
I think they're saying that. I think that's absolutely right. I think what they're going to come into this area – and by the way, I thought you recorded everything, Dave.
No, just a second.
Wasn't that tweeted out?
No.
No, I do think you're right. I think that, you know, you're going to see the manufacturer of televisions, and they're going to become smart screens, and then they're going to be looking at the application for cars, for homes and walls in ways that we don't even begin to appreciate right now. And I do think that the Foxconn brand is not known. I mean, they're the behind-the-scenes, you know, manufacturer. Right. But I think they're going to establish some brands. If you look at their acquisition of Sharp, which is really, you know, kind of the nameplate for a lot of their more consumer and retail face. I think an Apple, of course. I think you're going to see a lot more of their own identity and jobs and technology that we can't even imagine today.
I also think about, you know, right now Foxconn is the brand that we're all talking about. But what are the other companies that might be attracted to this workforce and this community in the future that we don't even know about yet?
It's exciting.
Yeah.
I tell you, southeastern Wisconsin, but Wisconsin overall, this is a really exciting time. You're right. There's not just the suppliers, but a lot of companies that are looking across the country and, frankly, probably around the world saying, there's something special going on in Wisconsin.
Yeah. I know there's a number of other initiatives, and we've certainly talked about economic development and social justice and some of the other things that UWM is really focused on in terms of this relationship. But it all takes money to support all these initiatives. And I know earlier you had announced I believe it's the largest fundraising campaign in the university's 61-year history. And I presume in large part that campaign is going to allow you to move forward on some of these initiatives. Where are you on that?
You know, what's really neat is that we sent an earlier draft of notes around, and I think as of last week, we had a different number. I'm so happy to be able to say that today, as of today, we have raised over $192 million toward our $200 million goal. So we're closing in rapidly. The pedal is still down. Yeah. We're not going to slow down, and the campaign won't stop when we hit that. I'd like to go to much farther than that. But really, I think the key point, and we talked about this at my leadership cabinet meeting today, what this means for UWM more than anything is that this is support for our students. Yes, it supports the research. Yes, it supports the community engagement. But fundamentally, the majority of these funds go to student scholarships. This is the faith that the community has and the incredible generosity of companies and others who say, you're our talent pipeline. You make a big difference in this area. We want to see that continue. So we now have a much greater endowment that will, for generations, provide support for student scholarships, research activities, community engagement, all important, but geez, let's support those students more.
See, that actually surprises me. Those numbers surprise me, or that order, because I would think that as someone who's dabbled a little bit in fundraising, that sometimes you have to have the shiny new object that you want to talk to a donor about. And I would think that some of the areas of the research agenda for the university with the new R1 status, still R, we can still call it new, right?
Yep.
R1 status for the university is the sexy, cool thing. So it kind of surprises me that you've had the success you've had around the student success model.
I think a lot of this is where you look at the breakdown between how much do we get from partnerships and companies versus how much do you get from parents, friends, families, and community members who, whether they're alumni or not, see the long-term value of the institution. We've always been about the talent pipeline. We've more recently been about an R1, but we have built that based on decades of commitment to research. So the neat thing about this campaign, which is called Made in Milwaukee, Shaping the World, is it's true. You know, I mean, this is where I can go to a Seattle or a Redmond and visit with a CEO of a prominent company, which I might talk about here. You might ask me a question or two about that shortly.
Sure, I will.
But that's truly, you know, shaping the world. And yet at the same time, if you look at that talent pipeline and you look at with 85% of our students coming from Wisconsin and that number staying for the first 10 years after they graduate. And when we look at our total alumni base of about 182,000, about 75% are in the state because after retirement, people for some reason don't want to stay in Milwaukee. I can't figure that out. Having been recently in Phoenix and Seattle, I still can't figure that out.
Sure.
But I do think that this is where I think it's legacy giving is a lot of it. I look at my own giving to the university and I look at, you know, scholarship support and I encourage that dramatically. I do think that if we look at this more carefully, you'd probably see the research component growing more than it has. And that's because of a lot of these big partnerships that we've started, things with some of the leading companies. And we've brought in professors to really help with their work and train students in particular areas, energy storage, artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, the types of things around supply chain management, things that are very much in interest today.
Mm-hmm. You know, I remember not that many years ago people saying that UWM had a tough time of raising money because it was such a young institution. And 61 doesn't sound that young to me until you compare it to some of the land-grant institutions and the like. But are you sort of hitting the sweet spot now of being able to talk to alumni and having a significant base where people remember their success at UWM?
Well, I'll give – you know, our vice chancellor for development and alumni relations and her team, so Patricia Borger and her team, have done a remarkable job in terms of bringing us into a level of professionalism and sophistication that is building on a lot of people before her. That's a lot of the credit due, but I think a lot of it is how much time we've been at this, building the databases, keeping in touch with our alumni better, making a stronger student experience. So I think all those things are cumulative. And you're right, we still are a very young university, and my eyes are set really toward the next campaign. And what's really neat about this, our last one, the working goal was $100 million. We raised $125. This one had a working goal of $175. We're going to raise $200, probably more. I'm looking at that next one. And if you just do the log, just do the exponential growth, I think we could have some really neat things in front of us. And again, why I'm so excited about this, I'm so proud of the support that we've received, the generosity, but what it means for our students and the partnerships and the possibilities for this to really be expanded in terms of what the endowment growth has been. So it's really a positive time in that way, despite some of the other challenges that you have in higher education. And there are many, but this is certainly one of the bright spots.
And UWM needs to stand out among a lot of other institutions that are raising money. I mean, it just seems like everybody's out there with a major campaign now. So you have to continually sort of redefine the success model so that people want to continue to give, I would assume.
Well, you're opening up a lot of issues when you talk about that. And I start going mentally to the challenges in higher education and how we have to reinvent ourselves. I'm very fortunate that despite the challenges from 2014 on that we face, and frankly, higher education for the last probably 15 years has faced unprecedented challenges, but we've got positive momentum going in a lot of different things. And I want to make a couple of points. One is that, Dave, you yourself, in terms of how you've supported the station and your work, has just been remarkable, nothing short of heroic. After 41 years now, so congratulations.
Time flies, thank you.
That's just an amazing run. But what you've built is a classic exemplar at UWM of you know, the community supports something and it gets value back in tremendous ways. But I also think, you know, as much as I would give credit to Patricia Borger and our development team, it's really what this campus has evolved to become. And continues to evolve and will continue to evolve. And so that's the power and why I think there's that faith that people can give and support an institution that gives back and makes a difference in a meaningful way across the arts, across healthcare, education, business, engineering, name the field, and we're there making a difference.
Mark Mone, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, is our guest in conversation, and you alluded to this a little while ago. You had an opportunity to meet with a former UWM grad who just happens to be the CEO of Microsoft. Quite an amazing story there alone. And I know you've met with him before.
Yeah.
When you guys have gotten together, are you talking about where UWM has been and where it's going? And what is he thinking about?
So he's a fascinating man. This is Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft. And we visited him on Monday a week ago in Redmond, Washington. And when I say we, it was, again, Patricia Borger and Blake Moret, the CEO of Rockwell. And we flew out to have specific conversations around the development of our Connected Systems Institute that Microsoft has been one of the founding partners of. And connectivity is something that really we're all about today in terms of so many aspects of our homes and factories and things. That's a separate issue. But I do think that where Satya is at when he talks about his time here, this is the first place that he landed in the United States when he came from India. Mm-hmm. And it has special meaning because of some of the people, both Professor K.V. Vairavan and Hossein Hosseini, who were his advisors, as well as other faculty. But he really bonded with Milwaukee. And he asks always about Milwaukee and some of his interests are in terms of some of the support for giving back. He was a participant in our Upward Bound programs at the time as a volunteer. He really has that passion and he gives back. And I think his book, Hit Refresh, and some of the other commitments that he makes to communities and his care for access to those who have disabilities and those opportunities. His heart is huge. So he's a fascinating man and he remembers little things. He remembers that I grew up in the Pacific Northwest and asked, you know, how I enjoy getting back and, you know, particular issues about, you know, my experience there. And when you're in meetings with him, you know, he's meeting with the president of China, prime minister of India. He's you know, stepping out of some pretty heavy duty
yeah.
meetings, and so it's a fascinating experience to be with truly one of the thought leaders in technology, and to have him I describe it as the corners that he sees around, and certainly since he graduated from UWM in 1990, what a great run he has had, and what an impact he's had on the world.
And I imagine he wants to make sure that Microsoft can help UWM stay current in a number of these technological fields as well.
You're right. They have been participating. They've already sent some individuals out to do some of the initial training in our Connected Systems Institute. They, through their cloud and Azure technologies, software in particular, have provided some great resources for us. And we look forward to that partnership continuing and growing, frankly.
Yeah. We should get them on this show.
That would be neat.
Yeah, we'll work on that.
Yeah.
Let's talk again about another issue that I know in spring UWM began a year-long spotlight to reinforce its eight guiding values. Why does a university need guiding values?
I think the UWM environment is greatly aided by having guiding values. There are when you think about this, the North Star, the why we exist and how we behave each other, with each other, and I find them to be so important. As I've had discussions different campus groups, from students to faculty and staff and our community, to be able to talk about bringing the guiding values to something that's not just on the paper, but bring those to life. It's so important today, as higher education is frequently seen as the place where a lot of societal challenges are played out. So for me to be able to talk about inclusion, transparency in decision making, and talk about modeling that, how I do it and how I expect others to do that. When we talk about diversity, not just in terms of racial or ethnic background, but in terms of every possible dimension, from age to differential abilities that we all have, and sexual preferences, name the dimension, religion, for us to be able to respect and appreciate and know that better decision-making comes from a collegial work environment. So those are some of the values that we think are so important, that create not just a better place to work in terms of, when we think about climate, it's really about microclimates. It's small areas in which we work with each other. But it's also something that we can model, something we can uphold, and we can talk about when we're serious about freedom of inquiry. We can talk about openness to different ideas. That's much more what's needed, we think. And so there's great resonance. And I have to say that since these guiding values were established about 6 or 7 years ago, we're bringing those to life today through videos, through having monthly focus on each one. And the feedback that we're getting is just tremendously positive. In fact, people want to have more programs. They want to look at more ways we can bring these to life.
You know, we're living, I don't have to tell you this, we're living in this crazy era where a lot of things that we didn't think were going to be taking up this much of our attention seem to be getting a lot of attention. Certainly the Me Too movement and any number of other things, the gun issue, whatever. Universities have to be quick to kind of be there on behalf of their students, their workforce, to kind of make sure, I would have guessed, they just kind of make sure that the university is reacting in the right way.
Well, having been for a long time a student of leadership and management and these disciplines that are thousands of years old, some of the adage had always been that a leader is careful in making decisions and takes their time and is steady and reliable and really, really ponders things. And today, that dimension, that construct, is out the door. I mean, you can't operate that way because of social media and because of the reaction time and how quickly the news cycle and just reactions are. And so the ability to be agile, the ability to respond to issues and have that type of presence and make quick decisions is very important. And yet at the same time, the gravity, the impact of a lot of these decisions requires a team that is at the ready, that mm-hmm. By the time issues get to any senior leadership level in organizations, boy, they're not easy decisions.
Right.
And so making those decisions on the fly, and I'm very fortunate to have a great team, and there's pretty significant consequences of how we choose and go down different directions.
Let me ask you to take off your chancellor hat for a minute and put on your faculty hat in terms of teaching leadership. I mean, if you were getting together with a group of CEOs and you were talking about this very issue, how now you have to be nimble, you have to be out front. I mean, that's kind of dangerous territory too, because you don't want to get too far ahead of the what's needed to be done. I mean, where's the balance there?
I think it's a good question. I think that we do have to be in senior leadership positions more accessible, more out there than we were before. But I do think that you need to have also the ability to have the right people that are knowledgeable about the different areas, because nobody, I was thinking about this over the weekend. At the university, we have so many different areas. We have, I was thinking about the events that I go to, and I can only skim the surface. Athletics alone, we have 15 different D1 teams. How can we be at all of those? Any one person.
Right.
We have dance and theater and live. We have 300 plus events a year. How can you be an aficionado and an expert in all those areas? We have these world-class lectures. We have people that come on. It's just like you have to pick your lanes really carefully. So we need a lot of expertise. So I think the leader has to try to find that balance, and certainly I think having strong people that you can turn to, people who can handle on the media side, who are your counsel, people especially inside, but also some good sounding boards outside. The final comment I'd make about that is, I think by being out there in my role, in any senior leader role, who are your customers? Who are your stakeholders? I would argue in a public university, they're everybody. I can tell you, 18 different dimensions, but I think any organization has those. So how in touch are you with them? You know, and that's the irony that in a lot of leadership positions, again, hold my chancellor hat off.
Right.
A lot of leadership positions, the further, the higher you go, the less touch you have with the customer. And so I'm very fortunate that I can you know, still get into classrooms, still talk with students. I can still, you know, interact in a way with the customer and their parents. The senior leaders in other organizations, I think you can get pretty far away from that. And I think there's a danger there by not being able to find that balance.
Yeah, we should spend some more time on a future show talking about that. So we're around the beginning of spring season. Has there been Easter break time at the Monet household?
You know, it's interesting. My daughter's on a little different cycle. My son has graduated from UWM, as I know. My daughter's in another state, unfortunately, but we'll pull her in for grad school at UWM. But she's on a different break. I was out last week. Our break we had a wonderful alumni and a donor visit in Phoenix, and then, as I mentioned, in Seattle. But I haven't had a lot of great outside or extra campus activities. But I did do some great cooking over the weekend. Great, I should say, in terms of me being able to get my hands into the kitchen. I won't testify to the quality of the food. Others who ate it thought it was good. But I made a wonderful. I haven't done much Thai cooking lately. I did a Thai curry with a butternut squash that I laying around. So I took care of that. And then I made this mahogany chicken, which is really kind of a fascinating recipe. It's got a great, you know, you can use it's a chipotle smoked sweet potato base with a chicken that's marinated in a number of different things that include some lime and soy sauce, little fish sauce, little brown sugar, and then you make a chimichurri that goes over. It's garlic, cilantro, olive oil, salt, and pepper, and it just blends really well. It's a cool dish.
Are you a recipe guy, or are you a let's try this, let's experiment with this a little bit?
So the first one, the mahogany chicken, is something that is based on a recipe from, as it turns out, another professor that was an award-winning professor. And this came up in the probably Journal Sentinel Recipes 12, 13 years ago. But the one that I made last night, the Thai curry, that's just out of my head based on having cooked a lot of different Thai dishes. So sometimes it's like, you know, I joke, if you're using a recipe, if you're using a cookbook, you're not cooking. but you know, a lot of times I really do enjoy the recipes. And I always put my own spin on it. I don't think I've ever followed a recipe exactly. And if I'm baking, I'm pretty exact. That's a different world. But cooking, no, it's a lot of fun just creating.
So you are a risk taker. I mean, you got to take – no, seriously. You take risks in the kitchen. But in some respects, as a chancellor of a big university, you've got to know when to take risks and when to put something into the mix that may not be the norm.
I hope that you're right. I hope they're calculated. And I oftentimes tell people, this decision could be my last one. So I try to find that right balance all the time, because you're absolutely right.
You were also out at spring training with the Brewers.
Yeah.
Did you get to work out with the team?
You know, I had some fun. I said hi to Craig Council. That was neat. Interacted with some of the players. I did some throwing the ball, warming up, and then I did throw out the first pitch.
Awesome.
I generally do better out there. I grounded it right in front of the mound again. I'm just like, oh, man. But nobody's razzed me about it too much, so don't start yet.
No, I won't, but I'm sure they were looking, because, you know, they need more help on the mound. So. And a few other places. Hey, thanks very much for joining us again.
Thank you, Dave. Always a pleasure to be here.
Mark Mone, Chancellor of UWM, our guest in conversation. He'll join us again next month, and we hope that you will too. I'm Dave Edwards.
You've been listening to The Chancellor's Report, featuring Mark Mone, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. If you would like more information, go to uwm.edu/chancellor.